Trying to offer, it comes out.
Good morning. Welcome to the April 12th meeting as a House Committee on Economic Development and Trade. As we near the end of the first chamber deadline, we have a number of interesting bills that we have the privilege of considering today, and we're going to begin by opening a public hearing on House Bill 3211 related to development of industrial lands, brought to us by Representative Springer and Representative Clem, and invite Representative Springer forward with her colleague. Adam, Mr. Crawford, could you please give us some orientation?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3211 and directs the Oregon Business Development Department to study the barriers to the development of industrial lands, requires Business Oregon to report to an appropriate committee or interim committee of the Legislative Assembly no later than September 1st, 2018.
Wonderful. Welcome. Thanks for being here, and we look forward to hearing what you've got to say.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sherry Springer, State Representative, House District 17. I want to talk to you today about a bill that consists of three lines. Pretty simple bill. I could even read it to you. Actually, three lines and one sentence. This bill came to me from folks in my district. Lebanon is well known for being positioned, as we like to say, shovel ready. And oftentimes back in 08 and 09, when we would talk about shovel ready in this building, I said, this isn't shovel ready. Let me show you what shovel ready is. And Walt from the city is going to talk to you a little bit about that. Lebanon has worked hard to position itself for opportunity and has maximized on that opportunity for economic growth many times over. That said, there's a bit of a stalemate that's going on right now as far as our industrial lands and how to develop those. We've actually had folks come from out of state, show up, say, yeah, this is great. You've got the workforce you want, or I want. You've got the infrastructure. You're ready. You are shovel ready. We have a planning department that starts at yes instead of I don't think we can do this, which is a great thing. And we've lost a couple of those folks, because there's some barriers that the city is not in a position to address. So we want to research those barriers, find out what they are, and then find out if there's a solution, and a solution that's palatable. So I think I'm going to leave it there. Let Walt talk to you. This man is by far the expert. And I want to thank Representative Clem for joining me on this bill. I think this is a smart way, a careful way to move forward. I do want to capture that you may at any moment, as of 45 seconds ago, there was no amendment, but you may see one pop up. It's a typical boilerplate task force amendment at my request. That is not my optimum. That's not what I prefer to have, but certainly it's just sitting there, and we can talk about that if and when that need arises.
Excellent. Mr. Wendelowski, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and also members of the committee. I want to say thank you for this opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Walt Wendelowski. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Lebanon, in charge of planning and building, and also working on economic development. As Representative Springer noted, we are very much a pro-development community. We have organized our public facilities and our planning program to encourage economic development. We use tools such as urban renewal districts and enterprise zones to attract businesses, and we believe we're on the forefront in that. We have approximately 280 acres of industrial zone land located on the west side of the city. I think by any measure, these are considered prime industrial lands. They are available in 10 to 120 acre sites. They are flat, they access truck routes. As we like to tell people, you are 10 minutes and two traffic lights five from any one of these sites. All sites are fully served with public water, public sewer, and storm sewer. And we're not talking a small pipe, but actually for industrial type of uses. Private utilities also available, both power and gas. In fact, approximately 80 acres of this industrial area It's located adjacent to a rail line that has connections to both Burlington Northern and Union Pacific, which from what we understand is unique in this state. As Representative Springer noted, we do have a wee bit of a stalemate, though, in terms of developing these lands, and that is the existence of wetlands on the property. We're still doing some assessment right now. We've hired a wetland specialist to do a little further investigation, but our rule of thumb is approximately 3 out of every 4 acres of this industrial land contains wetlands. And this really creates a problem to actually develop the site. They're scattered. You do not have any usable areas on these properties. And really, the only feasible way to actually develop these sites fully is to actually buy mitigation credits at a mitigation bank. There's a further problem with that. One is in terms of you are limited to buying credits within a region, but that aside, the cost of each mitigation credit can range from $60,000 to $70,000 a credit. Now, it depends on the market, but our current reading is it's about $60,000 to $70,000. Now, if you couple that with the land price, you can see that it escalates rather quickly, and it really puts the city out of the market or a competitive position. We had one particular firm that was a regional distribution firm looking to locate in Lebanon. They were looking at an 80-acre site. The initial development would have about 70 or 80 people employed, and on full expansion would increase to about 180 jobs. We had a relocation specialist come to the city, look at the site, and I think this is a pretty close quote. He said, "We need to locate in Lebanon." He was excited with the possibility. The price of the industrial land at the time was $40,000 an acre, which is a very good price for industrial land within the valley. But when you included the cost of mitigation for this 80-acre site, it increased the per-acre price to $85,000, and it simply put us out of the running. There were other places to go than Lebanon. We also had a situation where a major RV manufacturer wanted to locate as well. They were looking at our 120-acre piece. They wanted to locate and also bring in their subcontractors as well. We were looking at potentially 300 to 400 decent-paying jobs within Lebanon. Again, the wetland situation made it difficult for them to consider Lebanon, and they actually located across the border in Idaho. I want to make it clear that the city of Lebanon has no issue at all with wetland protection. That's not the issue for us. I think ours is a problem of geography. We're located in the valley. It's flat, and it gets wet. And we simply have to address this problem with our industrial locations. There are no other places in the city of Lebanon that we could locate industrial land that we're not going to run into wetlands. And I suspect this is true for most cities within the Mid-Valley. I just wish to impart upon this committee the extraordinary cost in developing these, and it's a cost that really is out of reach for the city to do. We love to partner with business. We are willing to share the cost. As I said, we have tools in our chest, if you will, of urban renewal districts and enterprise zones and individual development agreements, but this is really beyond our capacity. We estimate that the cost to mitigate all 200 acres would be at least $12 million, and that's something we just don't have. Mm. I'd also like to note there is one other issue. We do recognize the cost of mitigation, but we also recognize that there is something, if nothing is done, there is an opportunity cost. We've already lost probably 2 businesses because of this. And no jobs, no employment, and frankly, for our community, we enjoy the growth and development. And we also recognize development as a revenue source, so we can hire the cop, we can improve our parks. It helps our school district. We recognize that there are a lot of benefits to that. So again, I want to close just emphasizing the city is willing to work with anyone and everyone to look for solutions on this, and we are certainly always available to work with the state or any agencies or this committee to help where we can. And with that, I want to thank you again for this opportunity, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you so much. Do we have questions for the panel Representative Klum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe I'll just make one quick comment. Representative Springer asked me to join her in this bill. I'm happy to do so. We have in past sessions had, you know, some work groups trying to get at what some of the barriers are, but they ended up focusing a lot on metro area for whatever reason, and a lot of like Superfund issues, and you know, but we had one whole, this is probably back in 2009 or 2011, we talked about it. So I think it's very important we take another look at industrial lands and what the issues are, in part because some of the ones that had been identified then are now gone. So plus there was a whole process before for certified industrial sites or something that I think Governor Kulongoski did. I bet most of those are gone too. And so we really need to figure out what is there and what the challenges are. But I did have one question. The mitigation cost you're describing, which type of mitigation is that for?
It is for the wetlands themselves.
Wetlands. Okay.
In other words, if you have an acre of wetland and you want to mitigate, you can buy a credit at a bank. And that credit costs anywhere from $60,000 to $70,000. And that does allow you to fill in the wetland.
I will, if it's okay, Madam Chair, flag for you, sir, that in the committee I chair, we're having probably the next year we're going to spend on wetlands and defining what is a wetland. Because another issue is if it's really not serving the purpose it is, yet you still have to mitigate. It's not serving the environmental purpose, but it may fit a paper definition of wetland. It really frustrates people to pay $50,000 to mitigate what they think is a mud puddle on a logging road, something like that.
That's a helpful point, Representative Klum. I think perhaps the importance of this bill is amplified by the work that you're doing in the other committee, because it will help provide some input so that your committee can get
for sure
to useful outcomes. So I think that makes me even more interested in the bill. Also, you know, the plain language of the bill, I think it's important to note, doesn't focus the assessment on only one category. So even if there are differences of opinion in terms of how we deal with that particular category of barriers to development, there are a number of parameters that are challenges to developing industrial land that could be considered under this bill, some of which may have one approach to easing and some of which may have another approach. So I think that this gives us some good information that we need. We don't have the fiscal to move it today. So thankfully, we have the opportunity to carry either the fiscal will come in during the course of this meeting, in which case I will seek to move the bill forward, or it won't come in during the course of this meeting, and we'll seek to hold the bill over until Monday, which is our final meeting before the chamber deadline. And then, as you noted, it sounds like there's an amendment that I don't yet see on OLIS that apparently it just came up. So in the event that we receive direction from you that you'd like to move the bill in the direction of that amendment, then we'll consider that. But for now, really appreciate your input. Any questions for our presenters?
We already have it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3211, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2743 for the purpose of inviting for Representative Huffman to testify. I think as to this bill also, we're still awaiting a fiscal, but it's an interesting, important project on which some good consensus building has been done. And so, Representative Huffman, if you are still interested in making a brief statement after Mr. Crawford reminds the committee members the content of the bill, that'd be fantastic.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the base bill, House Bill 2743, requires the Land Conservation and Development Commission to establish a pilot program to implement a master plan for economic development on land adjacent to a rural airport, requires the commission to report on the pilot program to legislative committees related to housing and human services related to 2022 session of the Legislative Assembly. There is a -1 amendment currently posted to OLIS.
Excellent. And is there anyone else who'd like to come forward with you for this presentation, or are you the sole
I think
now?
I'm sufficient, but if...
Certainly true.
Doug Riggs and Ellen Miller are both in the audience if the committee has questions.
Okay, great. Welcome. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Leiniger and committee. John Huffman, State Rep for House District 59, which includes Jefferson County and Madras. this is just so close to being a fully baked product. I went ahead last week and upon some fiscal work that was done, requested the Dash 1 amendment, which is very simple. It sets up an account that the city of Madras can put money in for DLCD, the department, to help defray the costs of the rule writing around the pilot program. So that's very simple. The other thing that is turning out to be simple but late is that there was supposed to be another amendment that we had requested, and in my juggling of bills and amendments, I failed to realize that LC hadn't done that amendment for me. And so everything in the amendment, which is a series of stipulations to narrow the project to make sure that Madras is likely the only community airport that would apply to this bill, or at least very narrow, if not the only one. So we've worked with the department to get that language down. It's agreed on. It's been turned into LC. And so that amendment will have to be done on the Senate side. But for transparency and full disclosure, I wanted the committee to know that's what's going on. It was a timing issue, and I apologize. And too many balls in the air, Madam Chair. I'm sure I'm the only one with that challenge
right now.
It's too
bad that you're the only legislator who's ever had that.
Right, Representative Gomberg? Late amendments coming in?
Maybe, maybe not.
Well, that's great. I am really glad that so much good work has happened around this bill, and it sounds like all of the stakeholders are comfortable with where we are, and you've done a lot of great diligence to help eliminate any fiscal impact, which ironically has given rise to the absence of the fiscal that says there's no fiscal. So as with the prior bill, we will, I expect to seek to move this bill forward. And if we get the fiscal in the course of this meeting, we'll do it by the end of this meeting. And in the alternative, we'll do that on our Monday meeting. But really appreciate the great work and the clarification and the teamwork that you've led to get the bill where it is. Does anyone have questions for Representative Huffman on House Bill 2743? Okay, so the game plan will be to incorporate the Dash 1 amendments, which I believe we've not yet incorporated. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we are in possession of the Dash 1 amendments. However, we are not in possession of the fiscal for those Dash 1 amendments.
And then Dash 2s you will bring forward on the Senate side. Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And with that, we'll close the work.
We close the work session and we carry on.
Okay. We're closing the work session for the time being on 2743, and we're going to be carrying that bill over to either later on this morning or to Monday. With that, we will open a work session on House Bill 2012, the Eastern Oregon Economic Development Bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2012 relates to Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region. We are expecting to receive amendments to this bill. Unfortunately, we have not received them as of yet.
All right, then. That makes that. We may have more time this morning for other work than we had anticipated. All right, so with this, again, and this is very typical of this time in session for folks who are on the newer side, we will carry this over. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2012. We will open a work session on House Bill 2155. And Mr. Crawford, could you give us an introduction?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2155, the committee is being asked to consider the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 2 amendments replace the measure. They extend the sunset for tax credit for qualified equity investment to January 1st, 2023, increases the maximum amount of qualified equity investment the Oregon Business Development Department may certify per tax year from $16 million to $24 million, caps fees paid to qualified community development entities at 3% of the qualified equity investment, exempts qualified active low-income community businesses from the requirement that they may not have 15% or more of their annual gross revenues from the rental or sale of real estate if the income they receive is from the sale or rental of affordable housing. Takes effect on the 91st day following sine die. This bill has a revenue light issued, also has a fiscal impact statement issued, and currently has a subsequent referral to the House Committee on Revenue.
So we'll invite forward Mr. Campbell. My understanding is that we still need to adopt the Dash 2 amendments. And as Mr. Crawford noted, this has a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee. So it's one of the bills that we are essentially endorsing the merit of from a policy perspective to be considered in final instance in the Revenue Committee. And it's also one of the bills, because it has to do with tax credits, for which we are applying our committee's approach of asking the proponents to identify both the, in writing, the policy purpose of the bill and the deliverables, which will enable us to assess that whether or not it's been successful, which is an accountability tool that will hopefully be useful for all of us as we move forward in dealing with tax credits and tax incentives. With that, I want to welcome Mr. Campbell, who's done a great job of refining and amending this bill to try to help make sure it meets the needs that it seeks to meet.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition for Capital, and I can't tell you how excited I am to be here on a bill that has its amendments and has its paperwork.
Yeah.
So that's always an exciting thing. I've been asked to tell the committee what you can anticipate by way of metrics to determine that the bill has been successful. Those metrics fall under three areas. The first and the purpose of the bill in the first place is to have $300 million invested in businesses in low-income communities throughout the state. The second is that the amount of general fund dedicated to this program will have more than been paid back from taxes directly generated from the jobs created and the businesses created or expanded. And the third is that the program has created permanent jobs. Extrapolating from what our experience was with the first round, we should see at least 1,500 permanent long-term jobs. We're going to be working with the department to do some rulemaking about the reporting that those who receive these investments report, because they need to be more specific to identify what are temporary jobs. When we say what are sustained jobs, those jobs are ones that are sustained because of the investment, not just because the business continues to work. New jobs, both part-time and full-time, and also indicating the word I'm looking for, whether or not they have health benefits and the salary that those folks will be earning as a result of those jobs. To do that, we're going to be also engaging in an implant study. Currently, the implant studies around the New Markets Tax Credit are outside of Oregon, and I can tell you that based on extrapolating that information to Oregon, from this investment, we should see about $386 million in additional economic activity. In indirect economic effects, we should see about $110 million. And induced economic effects, about $139 million. But because that's based upon studies that are done outside of the state, we're going to do an implant study in the state so we can provide Oregon-specific data. That will also answer the question about how quickly we pay back the state of Oregon based on taxes. And I will be providing this information in writing for the committee as well.
Excellent. And we'll have the record open through the end of the business day today, so please do get that in. But I appreciate the very quantified description of the outcome, the deliverables, so that we'll know that we are succeeding, or whether we are succeeding. Mr. Crawford, would you please describe for us the Dash 2 amendment?
Madam Chair, the Dash 2 amendments replace the measure to this bill. They extend the sunset for the tax credit until January 1st, 2023. They increase the amount of tax credits that the Business Oregon may certify per tax year from $16 million to $24 million. They cap fees at 3%, and they allow active, qualified, low-income community businesses from receiving more than 15% of their annual gross revenues from rental or sale of real estate if they do that, if they sale or rent affordable housing.
So I want to make clear two important points on this bill and then ask Mr. Campbell to speak to them for the record. two important issues that have been addressed that are new to the work, I think, in this session are that transaction costs essentially are capped in the use of the Oregon New Markets Tax Credits, which is something that some legislators have sought and I think is really public policy valuable purpose. And also this Dash 2 amendment focuses and clarifies the availability of this financing tool to support creation of affordable housing developments that involve community facilities, essential community facilities that could be the nonprofit's headquarters or a health clinic or other or ground floor retail to help a development fit more appropriately within the community in which it's being sited. But could you describe, please, the work on both of those fronts? Because I think that that is important in helping this be the most attractive version of this bill.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I'll take the second part first. In dealing with affordable housing, because of the way Oregon's low-income community jobs initiative was originally crafted, you could not use the New Markets Tax Credit link for purposes of creating affordable housing. You could use it for programs that support those who are in affordable housing, but not for the affordable housing itself. What we've done here is we've loosened the restrictions with the express purpose and sole purpose of allowing these funds to also be used for rental of affordable housing units, along with whatever programs are invested in, whether that be transportation support or counseling support or job training or an actual business entity that has that associated with it. So this really opens up, hopefully, an opportunity to address statewide problems around affordable housing as well. The limitation on the fees, because it's difficult to know how much people are charging for the transaction fees to put these together, and there are some. I mean, you have attorneys involved and things like that, and it does cost money, but what we want the focus of this program to be on is the investment, not those who put the investment together. So by capping the fees at the 3%, that's designed to make sure that those who are doing these deals are doing them as prudently and economically as possible so that more dollars go to the actual investment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, in this session, I know we're considering a wide range of ways to address access to affordable housing, and some address regulation of existing housing and some address creation of additional supply. And one of the things that I think is helpful about this bill is that it helps address the supply side and also in the process creates jobs related to construction and eventually related to ongoing operation at the site of the businesses that are the work that is done at the site. So with that, any other comments, any questions for Mr. Campbell? All right. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session. I guess it wasn't a public hearing. It was a work session all along, so I will bang the gavel a few times and note that we are in a work session for House Bill 2155, and I'd ask for a motion from my vice chair.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated April 3rd, 2017 for House Bill 2155.
Vice Chair Brock Smith moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated April 3rd, 2017. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2155 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Vice Chair Rocksmith moves House Bill 2155 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion passes. All right, so now we are actually closing the work session on House Bill 2155, and we are moving forward to, I want to note a couple of items for the committee. A couple of bills, as happens this time of year, are not moving forward that may be listed on our public agenda. The bill pertaining to Canna Cultural Regions, House Bill 3031, is not going to move forward at this time. Maybe something that receives further work over the interim. I think it's still an intriguing bill, but it's not quite ripe. There is a bill also on greyhound racing that is not going to move forward at this time. See the bill number on that. Is that 3252. And I want to give an opportunity for any members who have comments related to those matters to offer those thoughts. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Greyhound bill is going away, and I'm perfectly fine with that. But at the same time, I don't want any opponents that have testified before us recently to take any smug confidence in the thought that they may have contributed to this decision. We had one witness that came here and reported on two occasions that the bill and myself as sponsor were engaged in some kind of nefarious clandestine agenda. And I wanted just to indicate for the record that I take some small amused offense at that. We also had two businesses that appeared here and tried to bully the committee, suggesting they'd take their business elsewhere if we didn't do exactly what they wanted. And that troubles me. Madam Chair, there are 40 states that currently ban greyhound racing and five others like Oregon that simply don't do it. I wondered whether these businesses were planning to relocate to Arkansas or to Alabama or to Kansas, but we'll never know that. The fact is that greyhound racing, whether we pass this bill or not, is a dying sport, and I think that's as it should be. I just wanted to thank the chair and the committee for their consideration, for their time, and their courtesy.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, with that, we are going to open a public hearing on House Bill, 3442, pertaining to unlawful dissemination of video, and invite forward Ms. Nikki Terzieff to speak to the bill, but first we'll have an Amanda Dalton and Representative Gomberg, please, first to kick it off. And Mr. Crawford, could you give your committee administrator overview, and then we'll go straight to Representative Gomberg.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3442 defines audiovisual work, creates a crime of unlawful dissemination of commercial recording or audiovisual work as a Class A misdemeanor, and creates exemptions.
Excellent. Thank you. Welcome, Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for your record. David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Oregon coast. Colleagues, the bill that we're going to be considering at some point has nothing to do with the draft that is before you. I just want to make that very clear. Welcome to deadline days. The process here is quite simply that we were working with counsel to create a bill. We were running out of time, and I asked him to write down just about anything so that I could get it submitted into the system and onto the agenda, and then we could come back with the final intended amendments that we could consider in more detail. So if there's anybody out there opposed to the text that is currently before you, I'd ask you to be patient. You may be opposed to what we actually come up with, but I'd rather you testify in opposition to that than what we have today. The backstory, Madam Chair, is that video piracy and copyright infringement is a serious, serious issue, a growing issue in our country. And it's an issue here in Oregon as well. And we'd like to try and address that for a couple of reasons. One of them is because it's the right thing to do. The other is that if we can create an atmosphere here in Oregon where film and video production companies understand that we've got their back, they're going to be more likely, all things considered, to come here and give us their very important business. So we're trying to encourage the industry as well as to support and protect the industry. That's the backstory on this bill. I'm going to at this point, yield the microphone to some people that are involved in crafting the actual wording that hopefully we're going to have time to consider in our next meeting. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
And I might just indicate that the amendments, as you've heard several times already today, are not back yet. So.
Okay. We have possibly a question or two, Representative Post.
Real quick question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gomberg, will the version that's coming, is it still, because this was at the request of Carl Kroll?
That's correct.
Is it still at his
request?
Yes,
that is correct.
Just, I wondered what his, who is he and maybe what was the tie?
Mr. Kroll is a intellectual property attorney who works. He's locally based here in Oregon and works with a lot of video and production companies.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Any other questions for Representative Gomberg? Rep. Rocksmith.
Good morning, Representative.
Good morning.
Aren't there already existing piracy laws that protect?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Brock-Smith, I'm going to let the advocates who are working on the specific language speak to the question of how what we are trying to put together here in amendment form relates to the laws that are already on the books.
Excellent. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we will invite forward Nikki Terzieff and Amanda Dalton, please.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. Chair Leininger, members of the committee, Nikki Terzieff here on behalf of Millennium Films this morning and New Image. They are film companies that are in Oregon and looking to do more in Oregon if we can address this bill and address some of the concerns that we have. As Representative Gomberg noted, there is a dash one. That dash one is our, pardon the industry term, gut and stuff. So it will replace the entire language of the bill. And that dash one actually does a couple of things. While the main message, I think Representative Gomberg is right, is that Oregon is open for business. We respect and protect your creative content. Bring more of it here, produce more of it here, and we'll help you. That they'll also do some modernization of our statute. So right now, the statute, when it was created, was some time ago. I don't know the exact year, but it didn't contemplate things like digital media, and it didn't contemplate kind of online peer-to-peer sharing platforms. I think what we've started to walk down the path, Representative Post, I heard your question the other day, which was around how does this address social media? Can I still share videos on Facebook? I think we're getting to a place, Representative Brock-Smith, I hope this answers your question, with some of our language and some of our email back and forth with folks like Facebook, that, and perhaps the associations who are sitting next to me this morning, that we can get to a place where we say, you know, there is a federal law in place and it is a stronger standard, and so that this would not be as burdensome, but that it would still provide some protections here in Oregon.
Excellent. Any questions for Ms. Terzieff, who is here on behalf of proponents? We can revisit this after we hear from Ms. Dalton. Thank you. Welcome.
Chair Leininger and members of the committee, Amanda Dalton. I'm here today on behalf of my client, the Computing Technology Industry Association, or CompTIA. I've also been asked to speak on behalf of TechNet and the Internet Association, which collectively represent the nation's leading technology and internet companies. We are here today to oppose the bill before you. We did receive a PDF of I think a suggested proposal amendment. It's a little challenging. You can imagine our members work across the country and the world. And so we were trying to respond in real time across at least three time zones last night. To Rep. Brock-Smith and Rep. Post's comments, you are both intimately familiar, Rep. Post more so in judiciary. There's substantial law on the books today addressing many of this. There's challenges with us understanding exactly how the proposal would fit within those existing laws. So we would love and welcome the opportunity to come back to you once there's an amendment drafted and speak specific to those. But we do urge you not to move this concept forward at this time. And I can't tell you whether or not we'll be able to get there by next Tuesday. Would be challenging.
Mm-hmm. So that would actually be Monday, because
Monday.
That's our only
yeah.
remaining meeting before the deadline. But point well taken. Appreciate that. Any other questions, comments for these two good witnesses? All right. Thank you both very much for being here. So with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3442. We have one remaining matter here today. It is a public hearing on House Bill 3375, and I will invite Representatives Brock-Smith and Gomberg to come forward and present to us. But first, Mr. Crawford, could you provide an orientation? We're opening the public hearing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3375 directs the Oregon Business Development Department to develop a grant program to fund infrastructure projects that promote tourism on the Oregon coast. It allocates $300 million in funding to the Business Oregon to fund the program. I require Business Oregon to consult with a nonprofit organization dedicated to addressing community needs through collaborative governance prior to selecting grant recipients. Requires Business Oregon to submit a report to the Legislative Assembly describing the projects that received grants, declares an emergency as effective on passage. The committee is being asked to consider a dash one amendment that adds seismic safety and resilience projects to allowable funded projects under the grant program.
Excellent. Welcome, and please proceed in the order that makes most sense to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee, I appreciate the
courtesy hearing on House Bill 3375. This comes to you from a place of economic development and seismic resiliency along the coast with regards to tourism-related infrastructure. You can see in the meeting materials a letter from the City of Brookings, and this kind of outlines, kind of gives examples of the projects that we're looking at here. And I'd specifically go, if you go to page 2, the rehabilitating and replacing of the dam and resolving the safety issue, the Ferry Creek Reservoir and dam holding it in for the City of Brookings was rated in the top 10 worst dams in the state recently. Moreover, when in regard to seismic resiliency infrastructure, and fixing that dam would also be a tourism-related infrastructure tie-in to the Harbor Water Public Utility District, where the last 2 years, low flows of the Chetco River towards the end of summer have caused salinity intrusion into the Harbor Water PUD, which is, of course, causing serious problems with regards to the economic and tourism development for South County and the Port of Brookings Harbor. I will add that the Oregon coast is a beautiful place that everyone loves to come and visit, and there's many dollars over the years that have gone to infrastructure repair and maintenance of various facilities around the state. Now, I'm not saying that Klamath County isn't worthy of these type of dollars or various districts amongst my colleagues up here. But the Oregon coast, as we move forward, especially in Southwest Oregon, in my district, is, as we know, hasn't recovered economically. The city of Port Orford loses about, we talk about water before, loses about 50% of their treated water, and we've tried to pass a bond, but they have some of the highest water rates in around to replace the failing infrastructure, and we're moving towards a moratorium, which would stop any development, of course, within the city. And so these are the type of things that I think we already know that our counties and cities along the coast have a lot of these projects teed up. There was a federal program that came through about a year and a half ago for these type of programs for funding from the federal government. I think the city of Reedsport received some funding for some infrastructure. But with that, I just want to note that I received last night, just to talk about the tourism hardships, the Oregonian reported that the Pacific Fishery Management Council that sets the seasons Tuesday in Sacramento ordering a season-long salmon closure from Humbug Mountain to Eureka, California to protect Klamath River Fall Chinook. There will be no salmon fishing allowed in 2017 out of Gold Beach or Brookings, which is going to have serious economic impacts to my district and Southwest Oregon in general. So,
thank you for that.
Thank you.
Sorry to hear that. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am still David Gomberg, State Representative from House District 10. I appreciate Representative Brocksmith bringing this bill forward and his invitation to sign onto it with him to share with you this interesting question, this interesting conversation. In all candor, this issue, this idea was first raised by the gentleman who ran against me in the last race. And so I thought it particularly appropriate to sign on and bring the conversation forward on his behalf as well. two things going on here, colleagues. The first one is that our southern coast is suffering. It's struggling, and it's trying to find a pathway forward. If we can find the wherewithal to improve, enhance, and establish a stronger tourism infrastructure, we give those good people one more tool to get up on their feet with. That's important. The equally important issue is the amendment that's been suggested here, and that is that we've got serious infrastructure needs for seismic resilience. It's not just us. It's all of you as well. It's the virtually the entire state, or certainly the population centers in our state, need to be thinking about how we move forward and what we do when the ground starts shaking and how we can put together an infrastructure so that the water continues to run, the electricity continues to work, the roads remain open. And that's a big part of the amendment that is here before you today. So we wanted to bring this conversation forward, but let's get practical. $300 million in lottery funds for tourism and seismic resilience in this environment, not going to happen. And just to give you some context, the lottery fund currently provides about $320 million a year for the common school fund. So this bill on its face says that we want to send nearly as much money for tourism resilience as we do for schools. Not going to happen. And if you should blink and send this measure forward to Ways and Means, it'll end up in front of the committee that I co-chair and won't go any further. But I did want to say that I appreciate the opportunity to at least begin this conversation, because I think there are two conversations here worth having. How we help the southern coast establish a more secure tourism future in addition to other potential industries, and how we begin to get ready for a major seismic event when our infrastructure is nowhere ready for it today. Thank you for your time and your courtesy, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Agreed. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Post.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's a great concept. I love this, guys, and I appreciate it. Representative Gomberg, I'm shocked. An emergency clause.
Whoa. You're not exactly, you know what I'm saying?
Traitor.
Sorry. Said that out loud.
That's right, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm afraid that I am indeed an emergency clause turncoat in this one particular case. But if we're going to talk about seismic resilience, how can we talk about earthquakes and tsunamis without talking about emergencies?
I agree. I just love harassing my fellow colleague. We are the E-Clause killers.
The E-Clause caucus, right?
Yes.
There.
There's two of us.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate I appreciate you initiating the conversation, and we have one witness signed up to testify who, based on written comments, also has interesting perspectives on this, but it is a really crucial problem. How do we equip communities that have faced a major economic transition to do well into the future? How do we deal with our seismic resilience, which is not where we would have it be? And how do we find the money to do it? So those are all important questions, and you did a great job of bringing forward and starting a conversation that I think perhaps we'll carry on further into the session and possibly further into the to the coming years. But thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
And Ms. Weiser, please join us.
Sorry.
For the record, I'm Jody Weiser, speaking for Tax Fairness Oregon. So I have almost exactly the same testimony for hearing that some of you will hear on a bill this afternoon, House Bill 3260. I think it proposes a solution to a very real problem. And it's almost identical testimony to something I said in 2016 on tourist taxes as well. We have low tourist taxes in this state. It doesn't make sense. We have no sales tax, and that's part of it. But then why do we have low tourism taxes as well? And these communities along the coast, of course, tourism is what they need to thrive on. They don't have wasters or coal or timber going out of their ports the way they once did. And so they need tourism. And so I want you to look at the chart. Did you get the chart The chart that it's an old study. It was done by the Department of Revenue for Montana in 2002. So obviously, everybody's gas taxes may have changed, and the data would be different. But I bet you the variations between Billings, Montana, and Salt Lake City, Utah, would be about the same. And you would, and we would look a lot like Billings, Montana, in every place but Ashland and Portland, because we have such low tourist taxes here. And so I think it is a solution that we could use. There's, I've heard testimony talking clearly about housing issues along the coastal communities, where you can't, you know, the people that need houses to live in, who work in those communities, can't find a place to live that they can afford on the salaries they make. That's definitely an issue. But in some cities, you know, their water system can't handle all the extra tourists that they have. And yet they can't, we cannot, because of the prohibitions on our tourist taxes, use tourism tax money to solve those very problems. And so I would suggest that a way to reach money to solve them is to go for the people who come to those places and enjoy them and ask them to help pay by taking the prohibition off of our tourist taxes so it can be used for housing and infrastructure of whatever kind. It could, you know, if it's at a lake, if you make a dammed lake more a tourist attractive, then that would be one of the things you could do with the money. But you might be doing a number of other things to improve the vitality of local communities. And so I would suggest that what we really need is a tourist tax on all transient lodging in the state of 4 or 5% for the whole state. And then we would start creating this kind of money, and we would stop saying 70% of the money has to be spent on tourist promotion. You walk into any hotel in Oregon and you see a massive display of brochures. You know, there's one for Sisters, there's one for Sun River, there's one for Deschutes County, and there's one for Bend. But there's no housing for the people who work in the tourist industries, because we're spending so much of the money on one kind of use instead of seeing this as a place to get the tourists to help support the infrastructure, including housing, the low-paying jobs that tourism supports needs public support. And so it'd be a great source to go to for that. It's illogical for us not to have some of the highest tourist taxes in this country instead of some of the lowest, since we don't have a sales tax. And I noted that there was a study in 2015 that found that 11 U.S. cities collect lodging taxes of 17% or more, and not one of them is an Oregon city. The average taxes in Oregon range from 2 to 12.5%. And so there's a source of revenue here, and we should talk about it. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for that comment. Representative Post and then Representative Gomberg.
Thank you. Jody, I'm tracking with you on a lot of this. I've always been big on, let's, lack of a better term, fleece the folks that come through our state. I would probably be a little more, I'd like to have a station right just before Ashland. Anybody from California would pay an extra fee, and anybody that wants to buy a house that's from California would pay an even bigger fee. So I'm probably even more hardcore than you are on this. But
I am from California.
Exactly. So California changed Oregon. So anyway, but seriously, I'm tracking with you, and I agree. I think there should be some sort of way of again, extracting some help from those who visit Oregon. I agree with you on that. I'm probably just a little more militant about it, that I'd like to see some specificity to it. But I'm tracking with you. I'm hearing you. I want you to just know that.
Portlandia made us a really popular place, and our tourism is way up. But we really aren't. We are making brochures with the money we get from tourists instead of funding the infrastructure that they actually need. And, you know, it's mostly low-income jobs that clean hotel rooms and wash dishes and fix food. And so we are supporting it poorly because we don't have enough money. We're supporting those people who are employed in the industry, and we need to find a way to do something about it. Maybe we should work on a bill for next session at least.
My tolling station.
Well, Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment. 3 years ago, Tillamook County elected to begin a transient room tax and is collecting about $2 million a year, which is going toward both infrastructure and promotion, making a remarkable difference in their local economy. But at the same time, along the southern coast, and that was a part of the conversation we had when Vice Chair Brock Smith and I were at the front table, many of the counties down there have chosen not to have a transient room tax. For reasons beyond my understanding, but I respect the wisdom of the local voters in making those decisions. I find it interesting that Bandon Dunes, a major attraction on the Southern Oregon coast, has actually chosen to implement a mandatory fee on all guests at their hotel in lieu of a room tax, which they then contribute to local government because they're not authorized to collect the same kind of taxes that neighboring counties do. There's a resource out there that we are not taking advantage of.
Well, that is a very good observation, and I appreciate the observations that you made just now. And I think, as someone whose family has lived here for over 100 years, it's true that in the Rogue Valley, it's true that people coming in from other states have really changed the housing market, the opportunities for long-time residents in some ways that are positive and some ways that are pretty challenging. I think a lot of us who've lived in the state for a long time have experienced that in the places where we grew up. And some of the good people in the legislature and in this room are more recent arrivals in the state. And it's important that people from both of those perspectives bring a thoughtful, teamwork-oriented approach. And I very much see that that's the approach that you bring, because it's a hard issue from all those different perspectives. And the solution, you know, be it sales tax, which tends to find a difficult audience in our state, how to spend transient lodging tax, and how to fund crucial infrastructure. Those are really important issues. So thank you for those good comments. And any other questions or thoughts for this witness?
Okay. I would like to make what kind of brought my mind to this. I stayed in Chicago, and in the same month, I stayed at the Oregon Gardens, and my room cost was approximately the same in each place. My taxes in Chicago were $22 a night, and my taxes in Silverton were like $3 a night. And I went, what are we doing wrong here? Because when I go to TripAdvisor and sign up for a room, I've already decided where I'm going before I know what my taxes are going to be. It doesn't affect my decision. It might for a conference, but I asked one of my members this morning, because he's putting together a 2,000-member conference proposal for Oregon. I said, when you got those two proposals from two hotels, one for $189 a night and one for $199 a night, did that include the taxes? And I haven't heard back from him. I'm really curious to know.
Interesting.
Because they're making a decision between two hotels, and I bet you that the taxes isn't part of the decision. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Really appreciate that. I would like to note that as to this bill, House Bill 3375, I think as the proponents articulated, there are some significant, there's a significant financial cost associated, which would make it hard to move all the way through the legislature in this legislative session. However, it does contain some really important ideas, and there is an amendment posted two times on OLIS, because we've had two separate meetings, that helps make clear that seismic resilience is one of the functions of the bill. And I think but since today we have this scheduled for a public hearing only, we're not in a position to be able to move the amendment, even if we were to choose to not work the bill, out of respect for the proponents and enabling them a chance to kind of perfect their idea during this legislative session for the purposes of further conversation. I'm going to hold this bill over so that we can have a work session in our final meeting where we allow the proponents to seek amendment to the bill to add their dash one amendment. But chances are good, to be transparent, that I won't seek a motion to move the bill out of committee, but I do think it would make sense to incorporate all the good thinking into this draft as you move forward in further conversations.
Yeah, can I add something?
Thank you.
Please do.
Yeah, I would just say, Madam Chair, I also serve on the Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Committee, and we've split the committee in that on one day we do veterans, on the other day we do emergency preparedness, and we have bill after bill after bill in that second list that address this. And I don't know if there's a way that maybe, it's obviously too late now because of the deadlines, but perhaps to work with some of the proponents of those bills in there, because we have bill after bill after bill is talking about resiliency and seismic and upgrades, and we hear it, you know, every week. So I'm just thinking, find somebody over there and work with them.
And thank you for volunteering, Representative.
Yeah.
Find someone, for example, who sits on the two committees who has that insight. All right, well, that's a great point, and we'll leave you to decide if that's something you could work on in the interim, but it could be a really great place to focus on attention during the interim.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3375, appreciating that good conversation. And now we are going to close out the meeting for today, but I want to note that we're carrying over the work sessions on the following bills to the agenda for Monday, April 17th, which is our final agenda in the pre-first session deadline the next day. The bills are House Bill 2012, House Bill 2968, House Bill 3211. Do we have paperwork on any of these bills?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, unfortunately, we do not have any of the paperwork on the bills we were waiting for.
So then continuing that list, House Bill 2743 and House Bill 3442 with the intention of seeking to incorporate the Dash 1 Amendment. Is there anything else I need to say before we...
Madam Chair, just one other thing. I understand you may be wanting to carry over the public hearing on 3375. Is that the case as well? The bill we just had in front of us?
Yes, that was my error. So, and also we'll carry forward House Bill 3375. Great. So I misstated the amendment part there, but I think you got the gist. All right, with that, we'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you. Thank you. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting.